As an elderly woman, Kira Vane has lived to see a prediction come true. Vane, who 50 years ago sang on some of Europe's finest opera stages, claims that a clairvoyant told her that long after her singing career was over and her voice had been forgotten, it would be reborn. Vera Frankl reports from London.
Kira Vane sits in her basement flat in London, an elderly lady alone with her cat. Nearby stands a cabinet crammed with photos that tell of a glamorous past. Though few would remember her now, Russian-born Kira used to be an opera singer. Her first break came in 1942 when she landed one of the soprano leads in Mussorgsky's Sorochintsy Fair. It was through this production that Kira met the man on whom she pinned her hopes of stardom. He was an impresario named Eugene Iskoldov, and Kira found him totally beguiling.
He had enormous charm. He was slight, had very dark eyes, slightly oriental, very sleek black hair. He was very dapper, very soigné always.
And what did he promise you?
He promised me the world.
At first, Iskoldov showed signs of delivering on that promise. He secured Kira engagements with all the major opera houses in Europe. Soon she found herself singing as a guest artist alongside the great names of the era, Gili, Gobbi, Bergonzi. There were appearances at the Albert Hall and countless radio broadcasts. But then Kira began to notice Iskoldov's shortcomings as a manager. She says he lacked drive and never followed up on opportunities. Gradually, it dawned on her that her big break might never come.
He had a gold mine. I mean, I was before Callas, I was before Sutherland. But for him, it was always tomorrow.
Why did you stick with him?
As long as I had him, I didn't have to be bedded by every other conductor, every impresario. Whereas other singers, I mean, the lifts were working all day in all the hotels in the provinces. As one went up, so the other one came down.
Iskoldov may have saved Kira from the casting couch, but he couldn't prevent her fortunes from going into decline. Unable or unwilling to leave him, she watched her hopes of a glittering career slip away. After a particularly disastrous season in 1957, Iskoldov committed suicide, leaving Kira adrift and penniless. The would-be diva went to work in an office.
It was absolutely shattering. I mean, I went through, I think, about 10 years of total unadulterated hell. I think I blocked everything out, you know. When I used to hear my arias sung by other people, I just couldn't hear it. Of course, it was agony, agony.
But as Kira gradually adjusted to the real world, memories of her previous existence began to fade. She did her best to help the process along by ridding herself of almost everything that could remind her of it, including her beloved piano. She disappeared unnoticed into obscurity.
I was just another secretary, I mean, just pure shorthand typing. So I just bashed a typewriter. Dear sir, dear madam, you know, yours of the fourth instant. Internally, of course, I found it awful, but somehow I lived with it. I became a perfectly normal person, was grateful for having a pleasant flat and pleasant friends and the capacity to earn a living.
Kira's temperament remained the only clue to her past. She didn't relate well to most of her office colleagues, but there was one exception, a fellow Russian exile whose son happened to be an expert on opera. Under Kira's bed, he discovered a box of dusty audition tapes and private recordings. They'd lain there untouched for years.
Thank you.
It was years before the discovery bore fruit, but finally the tapes were submitted to a recording company in Vienna, which last year brought them out on CD. Kira was terrified of what the reviews might say. She needn't have been. Music critic Norman Lebrecht.
It's truly a lovely voice. It is very hard to think of a modern soprano who has as pure and soft a pianissimo as she brings over on this recording. The portamento, the ability to glide from one note to another without any distortion, is also quite staggering. I mean, this is a prodigious technique.
Other critics went further, asking how it was possible Kira hadn't been acclaimed as one of the great operatic stars of the century.
Well, I just cried. I mean, I just cried, you know, from joy, from enormous grief. I mean, can you realise that during my whole career I was still never spoken of as great? I don't understand why now my voice has hit people when it didn't when I was actually singing.
35 years on, it's hard to answer Kira's question. Mismanagement, as she claims, may be part of it. But to be a great opera singer, you need more than a lovely voice. You need sharp elbows, a powerful stage presence, half a dozen other qualities. What was missing?
Artists are often portrayed as a very jealous breed. They are generally much more generous than that. And if they see a colleague or a new talent, they're very quick to assist it and to promote it. They actually want to share in the reflected glory. Now, although she had these opportunities, although she did work with a lot of very good artists, clearly they didn't see her as being anything exceptional. She might have felt herself that she was exceptional. But the real test, the test of her colleagues, that one she didn't pass.
Kira can't accept that. Today, at 80, sitting in her flat, still carefully coiffed, her back only slightly bent, she contemplates what might have been.
I mean, I'm not saying that becoming a world figure would have given me happiness. I don't think that's a guarantee. But at least it would have been in its own time and in the mellowing of middle age and old age, I would probably have been a teacher with loving pupils, with a sense of enormous fulfillment. I think the main thing is that knowing I'm 80, I cannot look to any future. And were I younger, I would have the world before me.
For National Public Radio, I'm Vera Frankl in London.